Carson Show live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. Today's program is action-packed. That's what it is. All right, it's you can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Why did I make this note to myself? Talk about drugs.
Are you on drugs?
Yes. No, I'm not. Let's see.
Drugs.
Oh, I know what I was going to talk about. We'll get to that. 503-733-2970. Coming up here in just a few moments. Well, a few minutes. In a short while. In a skosh. We will talk to Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. What else later on? I believe we're going to talk to Peter Carlin from the Oregonian and Surf. What is that?
It's a nothing.
A dismissive gesture? Do you not appreciate the genius of Peter Carlin?
I love Peter Carlin. That wasn't what that was.
What was that gesture about, Sarah?
Oh, nothing, Rick.
Okay. By the way, you'll know that there was an awkward moment thanks to Peter Carlin. You remember when Peter was on Tuesday, and he was talking about how Rebecca Webb from Kink had called him.
Well, it sounded like she wasn't very nice to his wife.
No, and not very bright. And she'd woken Peter and his wife, Sarah Carlin, Mrs. Carlin, up at 5:30 in the morning and was yelling at her about how the Portland School's website was all out of date and wrong and why don't they get their crap together. And then Sarah Carlin politely noted to her, you know, you're looking at the Portland, Maine webpage, Rebecca Webb, newswoman at Kink. And Rebecca Webb just sounded not terribly bright or informed and not very polite or nice. She had a little bit of a Cruella de Vil vibe going. Anyway, so we were talking about that and having some good sport with that. And then one Mr. Dennis Constantine, who's the program director for Kink, came by my office on Friday. It's like, so I hear that our morning show was giving you some material. And so he wanted to hear it. And so we sat and I downloaded that segment. We sat and listened to that entire segment where Peter Carlin was railing on Rebecca Webb. It was a little bit awkward, but funny.
So what did the program director think?
To his credit, he recognized the humor in the situation. And also in Rebecca's inability to tell Maine from Oregon. Bam. All right, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. Thank you. From the South, our good friend Ed McCarthy joining us now on this Monday. How are you, sir?
Rick, Sarah, and everybody, how are you?
We are doing we're doing fine, brother. I've had a bit of a weekend, but you know what? I'm back in the lovely Northwest, and everything is okay. So
that's good. It's nice out that way.
I don't know if you've had to travel in the last couple of days or whatever. If they just got you kind of stashed down there, but brother, it is a whole. When is the last time you had to fly commercially?
Listen, I got to tell you, I had that trip out for that character John Mark Carr.
Right.
I was out there 9 days in Boulder. We talked when I was out there.
Right.
And then when I left to come back, the Denver airport was just unbelievable. I thought I was lined up for the Space Mountain ride at Disney World. I mean, it was just unbelievable how long it takes.
I was talking to Roop about that earlier because he's in L.A. and I was in L.A. this weekend and I had to fly from PDX to LAX and then back. And I mean, it was not to recycle this, the same rant that I did earlier, but damn, man, it was unreal. Not only how long the line was, how inefficient everything. I mean, airlines and airports have never really been paragons of efficiency, but
exactly.
It just any sort of just casual relationship they ever had, with speed and with sort of like, you know, to getting their job done, that just seems to have gone by the way. That is now a thing of the past. So
they're trying to catch more and more things. My bride, we went down to Vegas and we came back, and Kathy, all of a sudden we get stopped. She has two things of cranberry juice in her bag.
Right.
And I said, what are you doing? Oh, God, we don't need this. Because it's amazing, you know? You can sniff it through with the cranberry juice, you know?
I'm kind of losing your phone a little bit there, but it's the same thing. And this is the highlight of our entire tour, or the low light, as you might say, and this is the thing I've been pointing out to everybody all day, is that we went through all of this ridiculous security, all of this being poked and prodded and having our things, and then by the time we got through security, my wife and I realized that she in her pocket had a huge tube of, like, you know, like a whatever, like a liquid, you know, like a makeup thing, like a whatever, it's like a whatever, not blush, but whatever it is that women have. And then I had like a big thing of shaving oil that I take with me. It's like a shaving lotion kind of a thing. That we, because this morning in the hotel, we're running, like, we're just stuffing crap into our pockets. That, like, we got, we walked all the way under the plane with. I mean, after all of the slowdowns and inefficiency and taking up our time and in the fuss and the bother, it wasn't even effective. They didn't even, it didn't even accomplish what they wanted, which was to keep us from bringing that stuff on the plane. So, you know, so it takes a long time, but at least it's pointless. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's crazy. Well, at least you can play the slot machines in Vegas before you get on the plane. That at least takes some of the pain away.
Oh, that's our next thing. You see, this is the really damnable misery of it. And I swear to God, we'll talk about something relevant to what you're discussing today. But the real misery of this whole thing is that, look, I'm a guy, I won't say I enjoy traveling, but I like going places sometimes and doing stuff. Like, you know, go to Vegas or go to, you know, we'll go to Southern California every now and again. We go to New York every now and again. Whatever. I'm not really a globetrotter or anything, but, you know, I like to go places now and again. I have to tell you that this, our last couple experiences with the airlines, and particularly this weekend, which was unpleasant for any number of reasons, is so bad that before this weekend, we were actually planning to do a quick trip to Vegas with some of our friends. We were going to, like, canvas our friends, see if anybody wanted to go to Vegas, go down Friday night, Saturday, come back Sunday, you know, just hit Vegas for a couple. It was so unpleasant. The airports and airlines were actually so unbelievably rude and inefficient and cumbersome and troublesome that it actually now is, we're just thinking about not even doing it. It's just, the thought is just too unpleasant to bear. So
you need a couple of days to unwind, because I had to do that Denver trip and then, you know, drive out to Boulder, then back to Denver, and then back to Atlanta, and then 2 days later we were headed out to Vegas. So it was like, that was too much airlines.
Oh, God,
too much airport.
And it's like, you know, and if you could really tally the cumulative IQ of the people working at the airport, you couldn't even toast bread, my friend. I mean, it really is just, they're trolling the bottom of the gene pool to staff those airports. And you know that's true. I know you probably can't say that as a journalist, but you know it's, you couldn't boil water.
I had the TSA send all my stuff, you know. You got to realize, most of the time when I travel, I've got all this radio gear with me, you
right.
know. And, you know, of course, that always sets off the red flag. What's this? It's a microphone. What's this? So, you know, it's okay. They're headphones. We're okay, you know?
Let me, is it true? And, I mean, I don't know why it should surprise me, because the American public is just so, they just swing so wildly with what they believe. Is it true that fully half of Americans now blame the Bush administration for the September 11th attacks?
This was just totally amazing, this poll. I couldn't believe it. And I quite honestly didn't see a lot of meat in this poll, because as the thing went down, it said, you know, not only the Bush administration, but, you know, 41% blame the Clinton administration. Well, as the years go on, you know, who's going to take the heat for this? I mean, you know, whose fault is it that these guys got in? It happened, and you know, I just don't think that the sitting president or the administration before, that the people are really going to think it goes up in increments in 4 years, that more people suddenly think, oh, they're to blame. I mean, how frustrated are they? Is that the problem? Are they frustrated?
Well, and I guess my thing is I guess I view the American public as being deeply ignorant about most things. Not that I'm any brighter, but I mean, it's, you know, at least I sort of embrace my stupidity. When they say that half the American public blames the Bush administration for that, like, what do they even mean by that? In other words, how do most of the American public blame George Bush for this? I'm not saying that they're wrong to do so. Maybe they are, maybe they're not. But by what means have they arrived at that decision, do you suppose?
I really don't know, because it didn't really say that in this poll, and that's what frustrated the heck out of me today. We got this poll, and everybody's interested in it, but it just doesn't seem to do it. I mean, I could run through, they got pages and pages of questions, but the questions are just like, almost like check A through D, you know
right.
how that goes?
Totally.
You ever fill out one of those questionnaires
oh,
and
yeah.
say, this is really a stupid questionnaire, because I really want to tell you how I feel,
right.
but I, you know, I've got to circle something, you know, and... this was just like the question was asked. Do you think, and boom, suddenly they say yes. It just didn't seem to pan out.
I think the American public is just really easily led by anything like this. I mean, for example, it is in the days following 9/11 and in the days following the... I remember in the run-up to the Iraq War, there was some poll that... you know, like 89% of the people were in favor of it. 92% of the people felt that Saddam had something to do with 9/11 or whatever. And, you know, of course, and all of that is, we've now reached, that all of that has reversed itself over the last 2 or 3 years. And really with no additional information, you know, in other words, it's not like we know something now that we didn't know 3 years ago. It's just that people seem to wake up in this country and flip a coin about which side of the ideological extreme spectrum they're going to believe. Do you know what I mean?
You want to talk about extreme. I was on with a Canadian affiliate today, and, you know, we're doing the same thing on this poll, and they're listing a poll in Canada where these people believe that there was some kind of a conspiracy to cause 9/11 so that they could go in and into Iraq.
Yeah.
Now is that a bizarre poll or what?
It really
does that make any sense?
No, and see, it really, and the thing about that is, the thing about that poll, because I've heard from a lot of, here in Portland, I don't know how it is in the South, I suspect it's different, but here in Portland, we are lousy with just, you know, just stinking, jobless conspiracy hippies. I mean, they're just everywhere, and I'm sad to say that many of them are friends with my wife. And I don't know what it is. No, it's true. Look, I gotta tell you, my wife is a beautiful, very intelligent woman. She has not one, but like three college degrees. She, you know, is very, very bright, knows a lot about science, knows a lot about things, but just has some of the dumbest friends. Just really blindingly dumb and smelly people. And so many of them believe that George W. Bush somehow engineered 9/11, or that the people engineered 9/11, so that we'd have an excuse. And the Canadians, I read somewhere this same poll, that said the Canadians believe that. And the thing about that is that that simultaneously indicates a great understanding of and a total ignorance of America. And here's what I mean by that. A great understanding of America in that, we constantly engage in subterfuge. Our government constantly lies to us, and I'm just being clear-eyed about this, constantly does one thing while saying it's doing another, you know, claims to be doing one kind of operation, is secretly conducting another kind of operation. On the other hand, it also shows a great ignorance in that clearly anybody who lived through, I don't know, at the last 25 years in this country, or anybody who remembers the Gulf of Tonkin, or anybody who remembers anything, understands that they didn't really need this big of an excuse. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I know.
If the government wanted to invade Iraq, they were just going to do it. I mean, there was really no need. Clearly, you can see now from the run-up to this war that we're obviously going to be having in Iran. It's not that the government doesn't fabricate reasons to go to war. It's just that history has shown that the reasons don't need to be all that big or impressive.
Why would you take down your own economy to do that?
That's exactly what I'm saying. It's not that the government doesn't lie to us. It's that the government has learned that they don't really need to lie this much. So that's why I don't believe the 9/11 conspiracy, just because the government has shown that we can be fooled by much smaller lies than that.
Kind of like the gas prices. A lot of people aren't buying the thing. Oh, the prices are going down. And I talked to a bunch of people today, and they're going, oh, it's going to be the election's coming. That's why it's going down.
Yeah.
Could be.
Really, there's just a guy spinning a wheel somewhere, and whatever it lands on, you know, mercury in the water, well, sadly, the price of oil has to go up. You know what I mean? Doesn't matter.
The wheel. As long as the wheel lands on the numbers, you put the little tokens on.
That's exactly what it means. It's like one, just run on the numbers. That's all it is. It's one big three-card Monty game. all right. Well, as long as I know that I'm not alone in my... Here's the thing. I've been talking to you all day today. I've been talking to people just to make sure I'm not alone. Talked to Roop to make sure that I wasn't alone in my anger at the LAX people. Talked to Baumgarten to make sure I wasn't alone in just my general anger about, you know, just about the terrorism and the way that it's sort of putting a stick in the spokes and screwing up the economy. Talked to you and make sure that I'm not alone in my irritation at these polls, which are put out, no offense, by sometimes people, including CNN. It's just polls that seem to have no underpinning to them. So,
I sure thought so about this one. I got to be honest with you.
It is a strange world we are living in, Ed McCarthy.
I agree.
All right.
Stranger all the time.
So. As just a side note, not to pry into your personal life. So, now, did you recently get married or something? Is that why you went to Vegas?
No. We were celebrating our 19th anniversary out in Vegas.
Well, that's great.
Oh, you still call her your bride? That's so cute.
Yeah, you said bride, and I was like, wondered if there was some sort of new love in your life. But so Vegas. Now, if I can ask, where do you stay when you go to Vegas?
I wasn't calling her that when she had the cranberry juice in the bag going through the x-ray machine. But that's been...
Yeah.
it was just an amazing kid. And then we get stopped, and, you know, the other thing is, you think you got a nonstop flight, they don't tell you this, or they did have it, actually, on our thing. We end up in Dallas. And the next thing I know is, we had nobody coming back from Vegas. I know you got to go, I'll make this quick, but... or we get to Dallas and there's like nobody on the plane, and suddenly they're getting on in Dallas, and this guy, he must have been 500 pounds, and he walks up to the aisle and he says, "I think that's my seat." And without thinking, and I didn't mean to say it, I said, "Lucky us."
That's fantastic. Well done, sir. Man, let me share that story with one of my own here. Oh, God, it's just another... Long story short, my wife and I were in L.A. to see a television show being taped that a friend of ours was on. And we got out of the taping, we sped to the airport, but United Airlines is now doing this ridiculous thing where they're closing the plane 45 minutes before takeoff, and they won't let you on.
Oh, no.
And I know it's not a TSA thing, because the other airlines don't do it. So anyway, long story short, we missed our flight last night. We had to stay in a hostel in Inglewood, and then fly. Had to get up at 4:30 this morning. So I'm going on, like, no sleep anyway. But as we were at the counter fighting with this woman from United, demanding that she explain why they wouldn't let us on the plane, even though we were 45 minutes early, I had purchased some, and this is the first she's hearing it, I'd purchased some gifts for some people here, including something for Sarah, and some other people. No, don't be excited, because I don't have it. Because I left it at the counter during the fight, and I walked off. I'm like, yeah, screw this airline. And then I walked, and of course it's gone. So I went into the LAX Lost and Found this morning. You want to go into a place that's amazing. It's like that final sequence in Raiders of the Lost Ark. It is just luggage as far as the eye can see. But you can't, it staggers the amount. It's like, how could this many people... It's not like losing a small little bag, which is what I have. I mean, I got a big freaking suitcase. I don't understand how that many people could lose gigantic pieces of luggage. And, I mean, that was just from, like, the previous 48 hours. It was astounding. It really was. So
well,
it's...
Look at some morons at Hartsfield-Jackson now in Atlanta. First I got back from Denver. I waited in half an hour. One of my bags comes off on the carousel. I waited a half an hour for the... And I look over... And there's a pile of stuff on the ground.
Yeah.
They decided to take it off. I mean, what is the sense of that?
Now, really, you got the feeling this entire world is being run by a mentally enfeebled 5-year-old. It's true. All right. Ed McCarthy, my friend, enjoy the rest of your day, and we will talk to you very soon.
Well, take care now.
Thank you, sir. All right, there you go. CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy.
Good God. I don't think we could have crammed more guests in there.
Sure. Oh, we're not done yet. We got the Dick Dale coming up later on, who you probably don't even really care. I got to say, it's not that I don't care, but it's going to be a short interview because I don't really have a lot to ask him. I just kind of want to be able to say that I talked to Dick Dale.
But may I ask you who he is?
Dick Dale is the guy who did this.
Oh.
Which everybody in our generation knows is the Pulp Fiction theme.
Mm-hmm.
This is Dick Dale. And I don't pretend to know a lot about him apart from Miserloo, which is that song.
So we're going to talk to him for a few minutes just about the one song.
And he's coming to the Doug Fir, and it's not, I'm not saying I'm doing it as a favor, but we work with a guy, Tim Ryan, who works at KUPL, our sister station. He used to work for Dick Dale and the kind of friends, and he's like, hey, he asked me, he's like, you know what, they booked him at the Doug Fir, they're not doing any publicity, they're not advertising it, and... It's not like I'm going to save Dick Dale's performance and everybody's going to flock there because of me, but he's like, you know, nobody's really talking about it, and it's a venue that he probably shouldn't be booked at, you know?
Well, I believe, Alicia, the girl who does all the booking there, is, you know, top-notch at what she does. I'm sure that she believes that it'll be a good show.
I think so.
She wouldn't have, you know, booked him if he wasn't.
I'm not saying it's the Doug, first of all, but he seemed to believe that audience-wise it was not, like, a good fit. I don't really know. I'm just going on this guy tomorrow. So he's like, hey, you know, it'd be cool. Do you want to talk to him for a couple minutes? And again, I don't know a lot about him, but, you know, I want to be able to just say, hey, you know, how's it feel to be kind of a legend? Because he kind of, I don't know if he created it, but he sort of epitomized, surf guitar. You know, he really did. He's one of the, probably the biggest surf guitar icon that is out there. All right. I was going to say, I have something to say about Ed McCarthy, but it's completely gone. This Lost and Found thing at LAX is just amazing, though. When you go in and she's like, because there's some Korean woman helping us and talking, and I don't mean to generalize, but he had a very, very thick accent, very thick Asian accent. And and you feel like such an ugly American when she's speaking English, and you hate to say, like, I can't understand you, but it was so difficult to understand.
Oh, I'm sorry? What did you say?
I know, and I'm having to, like, and she's like, this is luggage, you know, last 48 hours. And I'm like, but it just goes on and on, just the expanse of luggage. And you're like, how could this many people be losing stuff? It's crazy. Let's see. Are these people calling to yell at me about airplanes, about airports and airlines? I wonder if I need more caffeine before I do this. Well, I'll tell you what, we're behind anyway.
You might look like you're fading a little bit.
Do we have to break here?
Yes.
I'll tell you what, let's break. We'll come back. We'll talk to these people who want to defend the airlines. We got Tim Riley, and that's what it looks like to me.
What?
Thinks you are a big baby. I think you're a big baby.
Bow down to the man, Rick. Take it.
Do what you're told.
Yes, exactly. If they want you to do it, you do it.
Anyway, so I bought you something nice, baby.
What was it?
Doesn't matter. It's gone now.
That's true.
Back after this with Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. Stay there. Don't go anywhere. This email says, I carried a knife on the plane. Rick, I recently carried a pocket knife, a lighter, and a steel file on my person and in my carry-on bag through Ontario Airport to Portland. The TSA buffoon in Ontario made me put my flip-flop open shoes through the x-ray. My pocket knife, though, and my lighter and steel file were used in a job that I finished before the flight. I found out when we were flying that I still had these on me and was completely weirded out for the rest of the flight, wondering what else was on the plane. I hear your pain, my brother, and I remember trains, planes, and automobiles with the rental car counter, and apply that statement to all of us. Full-time. It's completely true. And again, it does have something to do with the fact that they're, like, making me throw away my crap for no readily apparent reason. But it's also, again, that it's completely pointless. If I'm able to carry through all of this stuff that they claim is going to kill us all, then you do sit there on the plane looking around you, realizing that everybody else on the plane could have brought something on that's going to kill us all. So with that thought in mind, have fun flying. It's 503-733-2970. We'll get these calls in a second. Ladies and gentlemen, let's go, shall we, to the Ministry of Truth.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Well, as we continue to mourn the death of the crocodile hunter, the pastors of a North Texas church held their own memorial service yesterday. They celebrated the life of Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter.
We were just amazed at how sad we really were about his death and passing. And you start to think back and look at him and you think, wow, he would have been such a great, great, amazing guy to carry a good message.
Okay, I just have to read this, by the way. I don't mean to interrupt.
No.
Our good friend Nate says, Rick, I would just like to point out that the phrase "meat on this pole" came out of the mouth of a CNN newsman. Now he's saying that everyone is interested in his pole and keeps going on about the pole this and pole that. That is true. Did you hear Ed McCarthy say that today? He was talking about this poll. I did notice it, but I never really put it together. This poll this morning, and it said that half of Americans think that Bush administration is responsible for 9/11. And he was saying that he felt the poll was sort of groundless. There was no basis for this poll.
Mm-hmm.
And he did say, Rick, there's no meat on this poll. Rick, I heard him go on and on about the poll. Poll this and poll that. It was nothing but polling all the time. Maybe this is CNN's new direction. Okay, thank you.
Isn't his daughter coming through town soon, Ed McCarthy's?
I do believe that is the case, yes. We have to find out when that's going to have to bring her in so she can be really impressed with the studios that we broadcast from.
She can
carry news of the exciting facilities here at CBS Radio. Here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, Steve Irwin will be buried at his zoo in Australia. The healing process is underway and Animal Planet is looking for the next crocodile hunter. They're looking for...
It's too soon.
No, it's been a week.
They need a host to fill Irwin's void.
They do need a host.
He was the first real star the channel ever had.
That's so sad.
Animal Planet people.
It's so sad that no matter how important you are, eventually they're going to make Blues Brothers 2000 and they will get John Goodman to put on a pork pie hat and pretend that he is you.
You know it's going to be Brooke Burke.
Oh, man, boy, does she look...
crocodile.
She looks so bad and bony and hideous in person, I got to tell you. And you want to talk... Here, this is... by the way, I did find my notes about this. I made a series of notes to myself during and immediately after the tape. And by the way, speaking of security, they had a huge sign outside saying, like, don't bring in your cell phone, don't even try. If you bring in a camera, we'll take it away from you. And so I left it in the car. When is that... Again, just like the goddamn airlines. They never checked me. They never patted me. I could have brought in a hibachi. They wouldn't have known. So I regret that because I could have taken all kinds of photographs. You could have seen Brooke Burke. This is what one of Storm's friends said. One of Storm's friends looked at Brooke Burke and said, quote, now that is what you call a cascade of fake hair. And it was like, it was the most obviously, her hair, when you up close, makes Gilby Clark's look real.
How did Gilby's look up close?
Oh, come so fake.
Really?
So unbelievably
fake. So like fake scalp, like in there underneath the
Because at one point, he did, now you know, like Sarah with my hair, you've pointed this out, that from the side, you know, the back, even the front, my hair didn't look that bad. If I bend over to pick something up, that's when it's all bad. Bend over, you can just see right through to the forest floor. Gilby Clark, at one point, when I was at the Supernova taping, leaned forward, and I think he was drinking a PBR. I just caught a glimpse of it. He was drinking something out of a can that had a lot of blue and red on it, and I'm pretty sure that it was Pabst. But Gilby Clark, at one point, during a break, leaned forward to pick up his beer to drink some. And it was like a lot of this. And I swear to God, two things. A... I mean, that's doll hair. I mean, it's plastic.
It looks like doll hair on television.
It's like those bristles off a foxtail brush, as though they were really long.
Like the shiny, too thick, like Barbie hair?
Shiny. That's shiny and just like too thick and too uniform and straight. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know what a wig looks like. That's how you can tell. The hair is too thick and it all goes in exactly one direction. The hairs are all perfectly parallel. And I swear to God that when he leaned forward, I saw it shift a little bit.
No, you didn't.
Like all...
No,
like, sort
if
of
he's
like
on a TV show moving around a lot, it has to. That sucker's glued down.
I don't know, but I mean, he's Gilby Clark. He probably doesn't rate the really good wig. That probably go. And you've heard my long lecture before about how the wigs in rock and roll, that's the great unspoken secret. No one talks about it. And so you got to figure, I mean, they're all in their 40s, aren't they? I mean, in the average, look, let's be honest. I mean, the average hair loss in a guy starts at, you know, 30s. So all four of those guys got a full head of hair. I mean, statistically speaking, somebody up there is sporting some plastic. I mean, that can't all be real. So, I don't think that that's...
Gilby should just go to Jeremy Piven's guy who did his plugs.
Does he have the plugs?
Are you kidding?
Dennis Miller does, I know.
You remember Singles? He was completely bald when he
that
was playing the cashier. And now, hairline... completely straight, right?
That is true. Okay,
forehead.
I'm making a prediction right now. You know who's had medical hair restoration done, and I'm not saying this is a plug. Dane Cook. Man.
Really?
Dane Cook, man, he's like older than I am, isn't he? I mean, he's like mid to late 30s, I thought.
I was pretty sure he was pretty young.
He's got amazingly thick hair. I was watching his special. We were at our hotel room. Oh, God, remind me to tell you about that, too. I mean, Los Angeles is not like the rest of the country. It's just, L.A. is a weird, weird place. It really is. All right, let me get a couple of these calls here. Let's see. David, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Hey.
No argument, no debate intended today. TSA employees are not minimum wage. Not by a long shot.
Well, then that makes it even more egregious that they do their job so poorly.
I forget what their pay is. I looked it up once. You can check. You have all the computers there. I haven't got one.
But it's too much.
I think they're paid like $14-15 an hour.
But that makes it all the more...
I think so.
That makes it all the more inexcusable that they do their job so badly.
Well, they might also get confused by administrative, you know, notices that come down. Do this, don't do that, this has changed. I don't know.
It's not even that. Look, I know how to read a piece of paper that says you can't take any liquid through. I walked right through with a big bottle of liquid in my pocket. That seems like a pretty straightforward proposition. I think it's a BS and crap regulation, but it doesn't seem like it's all that hard to follow. I'm simply and not only this, as I noted before, every single time I've gone through that x-ray in the past here at PDX, my several things, my rings, my watch, my bracelets, and my belt have all beeped and they've had to wand me. I walked through with all of those things on me this time and it didn't beep once. So some weird things have changed.
Maybe they'll bring the head of the TSA onto like a meet the press sometime and have somebody ask the person some real questions about these type of things.
Why do I suspect that won't happen?
Well, couldn't somebody work that out?
Yeah.
You say someday we can argue about education and teachers, but not now. Thank you. So long.
And I'm out. Seacrest. All right. Steve, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hello, Rick.
Oh, Uncle Steve. What's up, brother man? How you doing?
Not bad. Okay, totally unrelated to flying, although I am flying to New York this week. With Dick Dale.
Yeah.
He was in a movie called Back to the Beach.
Oh, Back to the Beach with Annette Funicello and Pee Wee Herman.
And he also did a scene, he did Pipeline with Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Is that, now see, Pipeline is another great, surf song, and I didn't know if that was a Dick Dale song or not.
Well, I have the picture sleeve 45 up in my studio of Dick Dale and Stevie Ray Vaughan doing Pipeline, and Stevie's got the thing blowing his hair in the whole nine yards.
Very cool, very cool. All right, I will put that down. I'm looking for, I mean, it's not going to be a very long interview, but I definitely want to be able to ask him some stuff that doesn't maybe sound like a tool.
Well, you all can ask him Annette Funicello questions and all sorts of fun stuff.
Annette Funicello, alive or dead?
Oh, gosh, probably still alive.
Tim, Annette Funicello, alive or dead?
Ooh, one of them is dead. It might be her.
Either Annette or Funicello. All right, thank you, sir.
Bye,
brother. All right, good. All right, Uncle Steve, there you go. Here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, going back to a story we had last week about the nurse who strangled the intruder with her bare hands.
Yeah.
You're wondering how she did it?
Boy, that's all kinds of... We had Dan DeRosen here, formerly of Coin, and he just... Well,
he's so funny.
He was hilarious. And just.
Do you see how depleted our session stash is now?
He drank a lot of beer, by the way.
He did drink a lot of beer.
The great thing about Dan DeRosa is he just doesn't care what bridges he burns at this point. We are going to have him back, by the way, as our correspondent about Portland media.
Well, this woman whose name is Susan Kuhnhausen, who is 54, her neighbors say, everyone I talk to says, hooray for Susan. Well, as it turns out, one of the reasons why she was able to strangle this fellow to death is she's 5'7" tall and weighs 260 pounds.
Oh, that's a whole lot of Susan.
That's a whole lot of woman.
Those are big hands.
Really? Well,
so if you need some strangling done.
He speculated that there was more to that story than we were being told. Because first she killed him with a hammer. Then she... I mean, maybe he was real small. That would also help. So, all right.
For a decade or so, a volcanic bulge has been pushing up over 150 square miles near Sisters, or perhaps an inch a year. Its growth is being monitored in a variety of ways. Magnum, or molten lava, has been pushing up from the ground since 1997. It's beginning to slow down, but scientists are watching the area, which has some of the more active volcanoes in the Cascades. Like anybody would care at this point. What else we have?
Just going through the pile of news no one cares about.
Nobody really
did
cares.
You hear, by the way, this is a good time to talk. Did you hear Scotty J doing the news on Friday?
I did not. I wasn't listening.
You didn't hear any of it.
You did not hear any of the show.
No, I didn't.
It was an interesting program. It was,
It was like the best of times and the worst of times.
It really
like
was.
All rolled into one.
I really don't know what to say about Friday's show. Friday's show was very, Scotty's a real go-getter. I will tell you this. He took the job very seriously. He took it to heart. He was sweating bullets just up until like 11 o'clock. He was so nervous. Mm-hmm. He worked for probably 90 minutes on those three sentences that you do at 11:20 about here's what's coming up. I mean, he just slaved over it. Mm-hmm. And then and the irony, of course, was that we had Scotty, who's a phone screener, in doing the news, and then we had Dan DeRose, who was actually an anchor, in doing the phone screening. So that was just all kinds of bizarre. But then Dan DeRose came in and just was so embittered about the whole thing at Coin and his whole experience there, and he told us the whole story about that. But when you get a chance, you should tell Scotty that he give me a little congratulations for muscling it through, because I sense that he was near just like a coronary collapse just at many moments during Friday's show. He seemed very unnerved by the whole thing. So it was, I think his blood pressure at any moment, had you checked, it would have been off the charts.
Meanwhile, time for a clown watch.
Here's your clown watch.
A circus clown has been given a fine after driving his car at an animal rights protester. Sparky, alias 29-year-old Stanley Thompson of Cumbria.
See, 29, that seems pretty... Being a clown Follow
me. Was that too old or too young for a clown?
Too young. Too young. Follow me here. Being a clown is like being a Catholic priest.
Or a magician.
Or a magician. Or a ventriloquist. It just seems like one of those professions that is from another era.
Mm-hmm.
Like, can you picture some 25-year-old that we know? Can you picture him being, whoever it is, becoming a priest? No.
I don't think they accept him that young anymore.
Well, not in that position.
Bada-bing.
It just seems like becoming a priest is one of those things that you used to do. And you can't picture anybody young who has all of their marbles kind of doing it.
When I was looking for roommates, I went and tried out in this room. They did not pick me. This really insane, freaky guy who was...
Serve the Lord?
Yes, who is actually going to become a priest, who was sitting there smoking cigarettes, and he drank like 5 beers when I was over there with him, and he's like, love Jesus.
So he's Catholic, though.
Yes.
That's how you can tell, yeah.
Yes.
I never met a Catholic priest. I never met a priest who didn't just reek of gin. It's true. And it had a cigar in one hand and like a scotch in the other. But being a clown is the same way. It just seems I can't. It seems like there really must be something a little unhinged about you now if you are a young person thinking we're going into clowning. And how do you break that to your parents? Anyway.
Well, anyway, maybe they teach at a Mount Hood Community College.
Oh, God. I got the saddest email from that kid. He's still deciding to go to Mount Hood. Even after all we told him, he's still going to go and lay down $20,000 at that school.
What are you going to do?
That's the spirit.
Okay. Well, these animal protesters said that we were standing there minding our own business when out of nowhere this car comes rushing toward us with a clown inside. He revved his engine and went right up to us. She added that Sparky swore at a demonstrator after seeing she was holding a camera, then drove the car at the group. He didn't try to talk to us. He just said we were going to have to move.
That really
it's
is
unbelievable and scary.
That's the stuff that nightmares are made of, really. When you hear a car engine revving and you look over and a car filled with clowns is like coming straight at you. That's an image that will never leave you.
This is the second part of the Clown Watch. A Rio Grande City man is behind bars after he is accused of exposing himself to young girls.
Yeah.
And in one case, dressed as a clown. Detectives say Leonardo Valdez Jr. allegedly exposed himself to an 11-year-old girl last week. He was arrested in Zapata County on similar charges. Investigators say Valdez, who works part-time as Bingo the Clown, exposed himself to a 13-year-old girl at a private party. Rio Grande City Police believe there may be more victims and are urging them to please come forward.
Plying his clown trade. There you go. There's the clown watch for... Hi! The Rick Emerson Show. You want to see me make a snake? This whole show is just so disturbing sometimes. By the way, Susan Reynolds, marketing director, CBS Radio Portland, claims that Annette Funicello is alive, has multiple sclerosis, but is still alive. That does count as still being alive. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Madonna's upcoming Moscow concert tomorrow will stay dry thanks to Russian experts who will fly up into the clouds and spray them with something to make it stop raining. Rain was predicted in the Russian capital, usually is if they don't get snow. Word organizers have now made arrangements for the gray clouds to be spiked before they reach the city. 10 planes will be spraying some rain-sucking thing into them. And
I don't have any idea what the story's about.
The Russians can make it stop raining.
Okay. All right, then. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's that. And Paul McCartney has used this before with the same success back in 2004 when it was going to rain on his
time. Paul McCartney used the Russians who have the ability to control the weather.
Correct.
All right. Okay, mm-hmm. There you go. People in Spokane are convinced that it's the Jews who control the weather, but apparently no. Apparently, Russians. There you go.
While we're at it, let's do a corpse watch.
While we're here.
I'm digging up home.
Oh, good God.
I'm digging up home. That's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of a love that's dead and gone.
Here
tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
A major investigation has been launched at a Dublin hospital after the remains of a British tourist were sent home containing 2 hearts and 4 lungs. The organs were discovered inside the body of 55-year-old Louis Cello during a second post-mortem examination in the UK. Mr. Cello died of a massive heart attack at Dublin Airport. Don't ask me what brought it on, it doesn't say. He hit the headlines 5 years ago when he flew his son to Australia for extremely rare brain surgery.
And so... I don't understand. So he arrived home and he just had extra organs?
Yes, two hearts and four lungs.
Is that sort of like, is his body, he was his body sort of like that drawer into the microwave? Or does it matter, what should we do with these 9-volt batteries? I don't know. Put him in the drawer. And the drawer just, do you ever look in that junk drawer at your home and it contains things that you don't remember ever obtaining? In my junk drawer at home, which is underneath the microwave, it's all kinds of weird paperwork and, like, faux credit cards that you get in the mail from companies that are just trying to scam you out of something or other, and then, like, a bunch of batteries, and, like, it's in a third of a roll of Lifesavers, and it always doesn't have the wrapper. It's just the foil and the Lifesavers, and they're, like, 100 years old. And then in that drawer at home are a bunch of those, like, plastic containers that you get out of, like, quarter toy machines. And I have no idea where any of that stuff came from. And then after a while, you start to wonder if the drawer just, if it's like some Star Trek creature, and it's just like a, the drawer just creates those things itself. It's like some self-replicating device. It's all very strange. There's your corpse watch for whatever the hell. Thank you. Should we break? Let's break. We'll come back. We'll talk Rockstar Supernova. Later on, next hour, around 2:20 or so, a brief interview with Dick Dale. More from Tim Riley, etc. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland on AM 970 Solid State Radio.